Hi, Matt here. Before we get started, two quick opportunities for us to interact. This Thursday, February 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific, I'm hosting an AMA, Ask Matt Anything, in our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community. I'd love to see you there. And also, don't forget to take advantage of our Valentine's Day free Coach Matt AI offering. Join our learning community at fastersmarter.io/learning. Now, a word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you quality content free of charge. Hi, Matt here. I recently have done some international travel, and I'm always amazed when people can speak the language of the country they're visiting. So for my upcoming trip, I'll be using Babbel, my go-to app for science-backed language learning. Babbel lets me practice real-life conversation, step-by-step, without the stress. It helps me build the confidence to speak up when it matters, from ordering a coffee or chatting with new friends. However you learn best, by listening, speaking, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 55% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS to get up to 55% off. Rules and restrictions may apply. Communicating among the different generations in the workplace can be quite challenging. Some companies have between 4 and 5 generations working side by side. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, I'm excited to speak with Bob McCann. Bob holds his primary faculty appointment at the UCLA Anderson School of Management, where he is also the director of the Leadership Communication Program, and a secondary appointment at the UCLA Henry Samueli School of Engineering and Applied Science. Bob teaches courses in leadership communication, entrepreneurship, global leadership, and persuasion. Bob is also a consultant and founded the McCann Group. Bob, I'm really excited to have our conversation today.
Thank you. It's really nice of you to invite me. Excellent. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Shall we get started?
Let's do it.
A lot of your research and work focuses on intergenerational interactions in the workplace. Can you give us some context around this issue? Why should we care about generational interactions?
We should care because in our current landscape, we have 4, 5, maybe even 6 generations in the workplace at the same time. And so there's a tremendous opportunity for meeting and interacting with people who are different than you, for increasing a variety of potential outcomes in business in a positive way. If we can maximize our intergenerational engagement, I think that it's a particularly important topic and a topic that means a lot to me. I mean, my dad is 97 years old and still works 50 hours a week. So I think all of us as researchers, as academics, we need to study something that we care about.
That's amazing, by the way. And certainly, we're graduating students all the time who enter the workplace, and they're working with people who've been there for a longer time. What and how do you look at a generation? What is a generation? We have these names for them, but what does it mean?
It's a good question, and there's not necessarily one answer to the question. So we can look at a generation as sort of a span of 20 to 30 years. Then there's the more socially constructed generations that demographers might use that is often pinned around a specific event in time. So, for example, the Great Generation, as I mentioned, my father, that right. generation might be tied to World War II, whereas the Baby Boom generation, a very large one, is more of a demographic based generation.
Okay, so there are lots of ways of categorizing it.
The
bottom line is yes. We have people with lots of different experiences in the workplace at the same time, and those groups or generations tend to have certain characteristics that stand out.
That's right. And I think sometimes we exaggerate or overemphasize the similarities and or differences in a generation. But on the other hand, it's a handy tool. It's a handy tool as well.
Yes. This academic year is the first year that all of our students are primarily Gen Z. We use these names to help categorize based on a timestamp. In your work, what are things that leaders and companies can do to help around these generational issues?
So if we start at an organizational level, it would well serve most companies in some sense, regardless of whether they're small, medium, or large, to have age diversity as a part of their DEI efforts. So we often have talk about gender diversity, and we talk about ethnic diversity and sexual orientation and ability and disability and cognition and so on and so forth. That's wonderful, as we should. However, ageism and age diversity sometimes gets forgotten. There are little things organizations can do. They can scan their own website to see if it, let's just imagine an older worker was looking at the Stanford Business School website, scan for images. Maybe it would look like a more welcoming place for an older individual if they saw different images on the website. Certainly would want to have anti-bias training. If you move to the next level, it could be job ads, for example. We can look what kind of language do we use in our job ads. So if we have ads such as, I'm looking for a vibrant worker and a fresh face to work in a fast-paced environment, we have to be careful for ageist code words. So I think that at an organizational level, intergenerational mentoring, where we have reverse age mentoring, is something we see a lot now in the research. Intergenerational team formation is something else we see. These are all sort of at the corporate and leadership level. And then ultimately, I think a lot of the research is quite useful. If we look, go back 20 years ago, it was that the problem of the stereotypes and so on was well-researched, but the solutions were not. And now we're starting to see a lot of the solutions.
Absolutely. And underlying everything you shared is this notion that diversity in all types is beneficial to organizations. Not just gender or cultural diversity, but also age diversity is really beneficial. And anything you can do to foster that. How do the different groups communicate differently in the workplace? Can you help us tease out some of the fact from the stereotypes?
Generally speaking, the stereotypes about older people tend to be negative, communicatively challenged, frail, slow. Then we have workplace stereotypes. Older workers are struggling with technology, or older workers as being less productive. These are stereotypes now. Older workers as being slower on the job. Older workers as being more loyal, older workers as being more trustworthy. So there are a variety of positive and negative stereotypes that we can see in the organizations. There is the stereotype literature, which is robust, and then there's the communication literature, which looks at what are some of the communication patterns that we see in organizations and outside of organizations that may, in some sense, play along with these stereotypes. So, for example, you may be over-accommodative. You may be under-accommodative. You may dismiss someone communicatively because you view them as an out-group as opposed to an age in-group. So a lot of the communication can track along in that way, too. Then, of course, there's age discrimination. And that is what I studied years ago. I started looking at age discrimination cases, and we started to bucket out different types of language that we found utilized in age discrimination cases and attract very handily with these stereotypes. You could literally bucket them into the out to pasture stereotype. So it's really fascinating how communication and stereotypes, everything here, go together.
Absolutely. And just as you identified some of the stereotypes that younger workers have of older workers absolutely have stereotypes of younger workers as not focused or not caring to the same degree. It sounds to me like part of what we have to do is be aware that this stereotyping happens. And then it sounds like there are things we can do through communication to help, one, bust those stereotypes, but also help facilitate interaction. And I'd like to drill down a bit more there. Are there things that you know from the literature or your work that can help bring better interaction among the generations?
The key would be quality contact over quantity of contact. So as an example, we now see many companies moving into shadow boards. So we have a board of directors, which may be senior, older person heavy, and younger people are brought into the boards to shadow the older board of directors people. So that is an example of bringing a young person into a group that they may be excluded. And the quality of contact there can be quite strong. Another one would be age mentoring. So a younger worker might mentor, and this is done in quite a few companies now. I'm seeing it in the pharmaceutical industry, where a younger person might mentor an older worker on technology, and an older worker may share wisdom with a younger person on something else. Cross-training is another. So there are many organizational initiatives that stress quality of contact. So just getting together at the pub or the bar for a party may not be quality contact.
I like these examples because they're things that you can build into organizations, inviting younger people to boards where maybe older people are sitting on it, forming teams in a way that's very diverse in terms of age and other perspectives. And it seems to me that the actual quality of the interaction is also important. So if I'm facilitating a meeting, perhaps I make sure that I'm hearing from lots of different people. It might be that the older person talks more, or the younger person talks less, or the language and vocabulary are different. And I, as a facilitator of those interactions, need to be very careful to make sure that everybody is literally speaking the same language and has the opportunity in terms of talk time as well. The operationalization of the communication, not just the ways in which we're organizing, also are important.
That's correct. And I think, is it Amazon where a lot of the younger employees are actually in different meetings or asked to speak first in the
right meeting?
The more junior, which tends to be related
to age.
But. So it's the same idea in some sense. And I think these type of initiatives are really useful, and they don't really cost much money
in many cases. Right. And the research that I'm familiar with shows that meetings, for example, are more productive and people feel better about their contributions and how the whole group is working. You mentioned technology as an example of some of the mentoring that can happen. I'm curious, based on what you know about this, how technology plays in this. How does technology play both as something that can help in these circumstances and perhaps actually drive even bigger wedges in between the generations?
Let's just talk. I think the interaction between technology and training is an
Sure, absolutely.
So there is research, some of it rather unfortunate, that older workers are often denied training. We also know from some research that when a trainer knows that an individual is an older worker, they will provide less quality training and shorter training to the older individual. There's some interesting studies done on that. Number one, if we could work to bust some of those stereotypes in and of itself, that would be helpful. However, older workers do train differently. But from the research, it would suggest there is a preference towards live training. There's a preference towards storytelling and training. There's a preference towards self-paced training. There's a preference towards an interactive engagement in training. So I don't think it's necessarily the technology that the older workers can't necessarily handle, but they need to be trained in many cases in a way that is differently. So all we need to do on a given weekday afternoon, go to an Apple store. The periphery of the store are all younger people, but in the middle of the store, it's all older individuals training. I think that's a perfect illustration of some of the differences.
I really appreciate what you did in your answer, which was to take a question that's based on a stereotype about technology and turn it into what I think is really more important, which is understanding how people interact with and learn, not just technology, but I think more broadly, to capture and truly benefit from diversity of any type. We really have to reflect on how people like to learn, like to engage, and we have to adjust. As somebody prior to my academic career who ran learning and development, it was very clear that you have to be very cognizant of how people best receive new information and training. This has been a fascinating conversation and one that I think opens up my mind, and I hope everybody listening in, to this notion that we need to be very cognizant of how we communicate when interacting with people older than us or younger than us. And there are things we can do institutionally within an organization, but also in our own practices to better serve those needs.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. These sponsorships support the cost of making our show, allowing us to bring it to you free of charge. Hi, Matt here. Career coaching often comes through our workplaces, which can be a great starting point. But sometimes you want space to focus on your priorities, not your organization's. That's where Strawberry.me comes in. It's career coaching you choose for yourself. You answer a few quick questions, get matched with a vetted coach, And in many cases, you can start within 24 hours. You choose the coach, you decide the goal, and you get to talk honestly about what actually matters, whether that's a promotion, a pivot, burnout, or even leaving. There's no HR involved, no performance review lens, and if it's not the right fit, you can switch coaches. What I appreciate is the sense of agency. When you're feeling stuck, waiting rarely helps. If you've been thinking something needs to change, you don't need permission to explore that. Go to strawberry.me/TFTS. It's coaching focused on you. Think of it as therapy for your career.
I end every one of these episodes with three questions. One I make special just for you, and then two that everybody else answers. Are you up for answering these?
Go for it.
So one of the areas that you study is persuasion. If you were to go into an organization and try to persuade them to implement one thing that you think would make a big difference in how folks of different generations communicate, what would you advocate for?
Who am I persuading? I always need to know who the audience is. Am I persuading the senior leadership?
Yeah, your leadership.
I would persuade them to implement initiatives to have all employees in the organization, regardless of how small or how large it is, to diversify their networks. Your LinkedIn network, it could be the people on your phone, it could be all the people that you feel that are in your network. Scan for diversity. Scan for age. Scan for culture. Scan for gender. Find opportunities around common interests that you can meet and engage with people that are different than you. Because if they can create opportunities for the organization, the people in the company, to deeply engage with people that are not like themselves, I think that could probably have as big an impact as anything you would see in an organization. So I'm trying to go maybe deeper than you thought.
No, I think that's absolutely wonderful and important. And I like how you rooted it in everybody look at what you are doing. Look at your phone. Look at your LinkedIn network. Notice that. And as a leader, what can you do to expand those networks for the people? I think that's fantastic advice. Question number two, who's a communicator that you admire and why?
Indra Nooyi.
Tell me more.
In business school, we always hear rock star. This person's a rock star and that person's a rock star. I think it's overused, quite frankly, not with Indra Nooyi. The language that Indra Nooyi uses is vivid. The storytelling is audience-centric and engaging. You feel like Indra's stories are our stories. The way I've seen Indra work audiences and react and be in tune with them and engaged is fascinating. I think Indra Nooyi is one of the most authentic speakers I've ever seen. Just listen to the word choice, her body language, her ease, her articulation.
She certainly is a good communicator. And as the former CEO of PepsiCo, somebody who is very important in my life since I enjoy so many of those products regularly. So she is the chief executive of the PepsiCo company. And that's a very good speaker and a very good choice. Final question. What are the first three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
I was raised just outside of Boston. So we think in terms of sports. So Bill Belichick, the New England Patriots, over and over and over talked about the three phases of the game. Offense, defense, special teams. So there's our NFL football analogy. I feel that we need to be prepared for our offense. So I really am a systems person here. It's probably because I teach at the School of Engineering, starting with the offense, your metrics, your data, your statistics, your stories, your internal evidence, your external evidence. I work with the students to make sure their offense is strong, and they're generally pretty good. I think they undersell the stories. They undersell the soft evidence. They probably overdo the quantitative evidence, but the defense, I think, is less. By defense, I mean being ready for friction, being ready for objections. I'm sure you know the book, The Human Element. I think students underprepare for that. If you can be ready for those objections, in many cases, the defense can become the offense. And then the final is the sort of special sauce, the special team for the NFL analogy is that we then look deeply at the audience and we look at our micro level and our macro level persuasion. We look at different persuasive techniques. So really for me, it's those three things. If someone always understands the audience, they're in tune, they're ready for Q&A, and they can prepare for those three areas, I think they're going to be in good shape.
I like the analogy in that it signals that we shouldn't focus just on all the reasons why for something. We also have to think about when our message meets the people and the resistance, hesitation, concern, and we need to be prepared for that. And I agree, many people are underprepared. And then we need to look at the tools that we have, the special tools that can help us, leveraging some of the influence tactics that you mentioned. And absolutely, I agree that everything is predicated on understanding the audience and appreciating where they're at. Bob, this has been a fascinating conversation. I appreciate you giving us insight into yet another area of diversity that we need to be thinking about in our communication and organizations, particularly around age and generations. Lots of very practical and tactical bits of advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about diversity in the workplace, please listen to episode 67 with Michelle Gelfand and episode 21 with Sarah Sewell. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Michael Riley, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder. Please find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram, and check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter.
Hi, Matt here. I can't believe that this month is the 6-year anniversary of Think Fast, Talk Smart's launch. As we start the new year, we're excited to bring you even more ways to learn, practice, and grow your communication and career skills. We'll now be releasing 8 episodes a month, coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. For those of you who like to watch your podcasts, we are now posting full video versions of each episode on both Spotify and YouTube. We're moving to a weekly email that shares specifics about the current week's shows and previews what's coming in the future. If you're not subscribed yet, head to fastersmarter.io and hit subscribe. When you do, you'll also start getting our monthly newsletter. Fastersmarter.io is also the place to go for transcripts and show notes for each episode. And under the resources menu, you can find English language learning content for each episode. Speaking of languages, I'm excited to share that a Hindi version of the show is now available. You can get access to our extended Deep Thinks episodes and listen ad-free by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or at fastersmarter.io/premium. I'd love for you to join us on our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community, where people from all over the globe are coming together to develop and hone their career and communication skills by taking asynchronous lessons, participating in learning quests, enjoying live author book talks, and getting individual guidance from my AI coach at fastersmarter.io/learning. Be sure to look at our social media channels for our video shorts, frameworks, infographics, and protocols. You can also help us by giving us a 5-star rating and positive review. 2026 is going to be a great year for becoming more confident, clear, and compelling in your communication and career. As always, thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.